Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper here with Michael Beller. It is Sunday, July 18th. Got a couple prospects coming up, at least one that's already up, one more that could be on the way. So some pretty interesting players to bid on this week. So we're here to break it all down. How's it going for you on this Sunday, Beller?
It is going good, my friend. Beautiful day here in Chicago. Looking forward to making some bids, maybe from the Lake Michigan shores. Get to the beach later today. It's a great way to wrap up a weekend, I think. How you doing?
Seems like a great beach day. I'm feeling good. I was really into Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I am a...
Oh, yes.
I'm a bandwagon Bucks fan at this point in my life. I was a huge Bucks fan back in college. And at the time of the Ray Allen trade, I just lost it. My 19-year-old brain could not handle that situation at all. So I punted. I wasn't there for the E. Gian Leon era. I missed a lot of bad Bucks basketball. I wasn't a big fan.
Forgot about E. Gian Leon.
when Bucks and Six became a thing, I was nowhere to be found. I obviously understand where it came from and what it's about now. Uh-huh. But it's been a great finals. I think just from like a more, even like a more objective perspective, I see a lot of people saying this is one of the better finals of the last decade or so. But basketball stuff, for another time. I want to start this week again by focusing on hitters and probably the best hitter out there in a decent number of leagues, in part because of NFBC rules and because he's been in the minors all season, is Jarren Duran. And Duran, of course, is an outfielder for the Red Sox. He was scheduled to debut on Thursday. That game got postponed. Then they kept him out of the starting lineup on Friday against a lefty, Jordan Montgomery. So he actually debuted on Saturday, had a single in his first big league game. Duran is a player that changed a lot during his time at the alternate site. He added a lot of power last year. That power carried over to the beginning of the season at AAA. He's always had speed. He's always had a pretty good hit tool. And he's actually a good defender in center field, so he really ticks a lot of boxes for us as fantasy players because the defense can stabilize the playing time, and even if the power or speed aren't there immediately, there's reason to believe that it will get there sooner rather than later. And of course, to make room for him, Enrique Hernandez, who's been great defensively in center field and has hit very well this season, is just moving back around in a super utility role. So I see a path for Duran to play a lot. The fact that they didn't let him debut against the lefty on Friday gives me this idea that maybe they want to be a little more careful with him and just want to go big side platoon. How does that impact the types of leagues in which you're interested in picking him up?
It doesn't really. I think you still want him across the board. It's hard, right? On January 18th, how many realistic opportunities are you going to have the rest of the season to just add a guy who can make this sort of impact to your team, who can be a power speed combo player? So even if he is in a big side platoon, I still want him everywhere. Even if he's just going to play, you know, five times a week, I want him everywhere because those could be five really good games a week, or three of them could be really good. They're going to get a lot of performance, I think, out of Jaren Duran, and the defense is going to keep him in the lineup. I wouldn't be surprised if he hits his way into being an everyday player, or maybe just since it was his literal debut, they'd said, let's, you know, put him on the best ground possible when he's making his major league debut and get him in there against a righty. So I feel like this is someone who, regardless of what his playing time expectations are right now, we know they're not zero, and we know they're not small. So I think you want him across the board. He could be a big-time impact player in fantasy leagues the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think with the comments that Chaim Bloom made about Duran's promotion, they seemingly want to keep him up for good. This wasn't a, we're going to bring him up and yo-yo him up and down. Obviously, that can happen. If he doesn't hit enough, he can go back to AAA for a few weeks before the end of the season, and maybe that happens in 2 weeks with the trade deadline just around the corner if they don't like what they see. But 15 homers, 12 steals at AAA, and just 46 games this season, just a really good, well-rounded player. I think we're hitting the point in the season, too, now that we're into the second half. If you had money left, if you have not been bidding aggressively, maybe you've been very fortunate with injuries, or you've been unfortunate and people have just been outbidding you for players you want, you have to spend it somewhere. So I think Duran is one of the better hitters we're going to see get called up down the stretch. We could have a couple other guys. Bobby Witt Jr. could debut, or Adley Rutschman. Like, the non-contending teams could bring guys up. Yep. We don't want to rely on that. So I think we're looking at like at least a 10% share of your original budget, but probably a bit more to get Duran because he can help in all the categories. If you had to push up even to 20%, assuming you had about half of your original budget left, would you be that aggressive for Duran given where we're at in the season?
I think so. And for all the reasons you just said, right? You can't take this money home with you. You can't roll it over to next season in most places. It doesn't turn into literal money that you get to put in your pocket after the season. So this is going to be, I mean, how many guys, there is a non-zero chance that Jaren Duran is the best player taken on waivers from today through the rest of the season. We know that is true. And so I want to be in on that guy. So yes, I would be comfortable going, you know, 20, 25% of what I've got to get him.
Yeah, so be prepared to spend up if you'd like Jaren Duran to be on your roster the rest of the way. Could be a nice payoff, though, given all the different categories that he contributes toward. I was a bit surprised digging into roster rates just a little while ago. J.D. Davis is available in a greater number of leagues than I expected. Over half of CBS leagues, I believe. I'm definitely in on the bat. There's no question about that. And we just found out that Francisco Lindor has an oblique injury. It's a grade 2 oblique injury. So they're down one everyday infielder, which I think softens some of the risk of part-time guys chewing into Davis's workload in the near term. But what are your expectations for Davis going forward?
Yeah, I'm with you, too. I think he's going to play every day. I mean, this team in the Mets has really failed to take advantage of what's been going on behind them in the standings. You know, they really had an opportunity to put some distance between themselves and the rest of the NL East over the, you know, last couple of weeks, especially once they got healthy, and they didn't do it. And it's in part because their offense just really has been uneven all season. Obviously, a lot of this had to do with injuries to guys like Davis, but the point remains that they need to be getting more out of the lineup going forward. And so I think that just adds up to J.D. Davis being in there every day, hitting right in the middle of the order somewhere. And so, like you said, the bat, I think we can buy the bat pretty comfortably at this stage of his career. And so I'm in on him too. An easy guy to get on board with all leagues, regardless of size, even regardless of what you have. Maybe you don't feel like you need a third baseman, but J.D. Davis is such a great player, period, that I would want to find a way to get him on my team unless I was like I've got in top wars, I've got Manny Machado, Yoan Moncada, and Nelson Cruz, right? So I've got corner infield blocked, third base blocked, utility blocked. There's nothing I could do. I would have to be in that extreme of a situation to not go after J.D. Davis.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's an impact player in just about all formats. We've seen pretty big numbers from him going back to 2019, his first year with the Mets. Easy 20 home run power, but also a good source of average and OBP, so it fits well in a lot of leagues. The only thing he really doesn't do is run. That's fine. He hits enough to offset that. So I'm definitely in on Davis, and I think it's going to be probably a little less than what it takes to get Duran, but one of the other guys who's out there in a decent number of places where you are going to have to spend up if you do want to go ahead and get him on your roster. Cole Calhoun actually returned from an injury just before the All-Star break, but he's also floating around in a decent number of leagues, and I keep wondering if he's also going to be on the move because Arizona is a clear-cut seller, and there are a few teams out there that could use some corner outfield upgrades. We're talking about a guy who's had a pretty up-and-down sort of track record in recent years, but 33 home runs back in the year of the rabbit ball in 2019, and usually he's just a solid player. Even if he's a low-average guy, it's like 20 home run pop, and pretty good run production based on where he hits in the order. What is your interest level in Calhoun where available?
Yeah, I think we know exactly what sort of player he is. He's exactly the guy that you laid out. So my interest level isn't overwhelming because he does have his flaws, and it's not the hardest thing in the world to find 20 homer pop sort of guys. You probably have a ton of them already on your roster. He's not necessarily the guy who's going to move the needle in a big way. I think I would have to be power needy or outfield needy to be going after him. I think there's someone who fits that bill in every single league. I think Cole Calhoun's an easy guy to get on a roster in a 14 or a 15 team mixer. I don't think there's any question about that. It just doesn't necessarily need to be you. It doesn't necessarily need to be me who's going after him. I would have to need power and or an outfielder to really get in on him. If I was in that position, I would be pretty interested in him because of that. You just know what you're getting. You're getting a 20 homer pop sort of guy. You know the rates aren't going to be great. If he gets traded to another spot, hopefully he'll have a little bit better of an environment around him, a better lineup context than what we're going to get from him in Arizona. So there's reasons to like him, but I think you need what he offers if you're really going to go after him. It's not like a JD Davis or Jaren Duran situation for me.
Well, I think for me, you're accepting a batting average hit. If you get good batting average, you're lucky. He's hitting .263 this season, but he hasn't topped .244 in the last 4 years. Projection systems all reflect that. Interestingly, though, the power output and the run production, just the overall offensive value, depending on which projection system you look at, Calhoun comes out somewhat comparable to JD Davis. So I think he's the kind of guy that will go for less than Davis, but might provide similar value, albeit without the average, as we mentioned before. So wouldn't forget about him, would at least make him a contingency bid as someone behind Davis if you're looking for some outfield help this weekend. There's one more outfielder I definitely want to get to, and that's Oscar Mercado. He is back up in the big leagues right now. As it stands currently, Cleveland is not pushing his playing time to an everyday level just yet, but they are still playing Bradley Zimmer. They are still playing Daniel Johnson. If Mercado hits, he'll play more. And I think the thing that has me encouraged about him is that in the brief time that he's been back in the big leagues this year, he is striking out less than he did in the shortened season. A 25% K rate is tolerable. He's walking more like he did in the minor leagues. He's got a 10% walk rate. Again, it's only 14 games, but we're seeing some underlying changes from Mercado that are encouraging. And given the makeup of this depth chart, to me, it seems like a no-brainer to at least include him. If you're in a 15-team league and he's still out there, he can help potentially in every category, maybe a slightly below average contributor again in the batting average category. But unlike Cole Calhoun, I think you might actually get maybe 8 to 10 steals from Mercado if things break just right with his playing time the rest of the way.
Yeah, not only because of what they're trotting out there in the outfield every single day, but also where Cleveland sits in the standings. White Sox are starting to run away with the AL Central here. Doesn't feel like the Indians, as unlikely as they were at remaining in the race in the first half, doesn't feel like they're going to push the White Sox or really push for a wild card spot. And Oscar Mercado's a guy who, you know, this team is not that far away from competing. Oscar Mercado could be the guy who is an important player on the next good Cleveland team, the next contending team in Cleveland. Definitely could have Oscar Mercado as its everyday center fielder. So I think the Indians owe it to themselves to see what they have in him the rest of the way. I don't see him becoming an everyday player without hitting. He's not just going to get that by dint of his reputation. But I do think he's going to play a lot, and I do think there's a clear, obvious path to him being an everyday player. The speed's going to be there for him. There's always going to be a little bit of pop in this bat as well. I would rather go after him than Cole Calhoun if I was shooting for upside. Yeah, we know what Cole Calhoun is. I would rather go for Mercado if I needed an upside sort of play in my outfield, because I do think that if he can just walk at this rate and keep the strikeouts down, there's a really nice player in here.
I think you can keep the bids pretty light in leagues that use FAB too, probably in the 3% to 5% range at most. Maybe that past reputation, the excitement we had about him going into the shortened season, maybe that's still lingering in some places, but I do like what he brings to the table. And I'm probably opposite you in this one, where I'd prefer Calhoun to Mercado, but what I need categorically could also guide that decision too. If stolen bases are really clumped together in a league, that could be enough to go ahead and prioritize Mercado instead. I guess the other thing to think about, too, if you expect Cole Calhoun to be traded, maybe he's on a team that's so much better than the Diamondbacks that they can back off his playing time a little bit. He's a regular but not an everyday sort of guy there if that happens, whereas Mercado, they could go the other direction. They could literally play him every day for the final 2 months of the season with reason if they don't change up the outfield mix in the near future. One other bat that I think became a little more interesting in the last couple of days is Patrick Wisdom. I think with the way the Cubs move a few guys around, Jock Peterson going to Atlanta gives Wisdom more chances to play against same-handed pitching. So do you agree with that assessment? Because I think just in terms of what Wisdom has done power-wise, a 264, 315, 620 line with 13 homers in 45 games, that gets people pretty excited. There is a question of plate discipline here. Only 8 walks against 51 Ks in those 45 games. But is Wisdom going to play enough and do enough damage to become more shallow league relevant now that Jock Peterson's out of the picture?
Yeah, I think so. And Chris Bryant could be out of the picture too. And then he would really be locked in as an everyday player. I think the power's for real. I mean, the 13 homers in the 45 games, that speaks a lot for itself. But he had 31 homers in 2019. We all know what 2019 was at the AAA level. 31 homers in 2017. 15 homers in just a 421 plate appearances in 2018. So the guy can mash. I mean, the guy can hit for some legitimate power. You're going to get that from him. And you're going to get him playing mostly every day with the Cubs in obvious sell mode. And it will be every day if they do indeed find a taker and move on from Chris Bryant. So I think Patrick Wisdom, if you need the pop, he's going to provide it, and he's going to get to play for this team basically every day down the second half. So I think an easy guy to get on board with if you're looking for power.
Definitely the kind of guy that has some batting average downside, but they also don't have a lot of competition for him playing time-wise. And if they want to see if they have a future piece there, you know, exhausting his playing time the rest of the way is one way to sort that out. A whole bunch of names for deeper leagues that we're going to run through pretty quickly. I noticed Elvis Andrews still playing a lot. His season-long numbers are just awful. He's got a 237, 277, 322 line, but 8 steals. And unless the A's trade for a shortstop, which is totally possible, they've been linked to Trevor Story. They could go out and maybe trade for Andrelton Simmons and just go all defense at the position. But if Andrews keeps this job, do you have any interest in him in leagues where you're scrambling for middle infield help, given the difficulty of finding steals on the wire?
Yeah, scrambling for middle infield help and also stolen base needy. If I check both of those boxes, then I can swallow the batting average hit. I can swallow the fact that he's not really going to give me much else and just go after what he does give me, which is a little bit of middle infield help and some speed. If I need both of those, I can go after him. If I don't need one or the other, I'm pretty easily passing on him.
Couple other names to throw at you here. Gavin Sheets playing a lot for the White Sox. He's actually started every game for the White Sox since June 29th. He has first base and outfield eligibility in some leagues. Kind of a similar profile to Patrick Wisdom, actually. 244, 340, 600, 4 homers in 14 games so far. We know Eloy Jimenez is making a lot of progress in his rehab assignment, so I think once he comes back, that could crowd things in a way that makes it more difficult for Sheets to play, given that Jimenez is going to be limited to left field and DH, and then Vaughn is in that mix along with Abreu. But Sheets can at least play in right field, and if they don't want to play Brian Goodwin as much, there's a path for Sheets to hang on a little longer, at least until Luis Robert comes back a bit later this season. How do you view Sheets going into bids today?
If I need short-term power, I can go after him. I would also be concerned about the White Sox being active in the trade market over the next 12 days. I would expect this team to go out and make a move with the fact that they can pretty much lock up the AL Central and be real players in the postseason. But even with Jimenez and Robert back, they probably need another bat somewhere on this team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go out and get that in the trade market. Gavin Sheets, I think, is probably going to be just a short-term guy for us on our radar. But there's value in that. And so if you need some power right now and you're not trying to be married to the guy for the rest of the season, I could see going after him today.
From a current member of the White Sox to a former member, Adam Eaton. Now with
two-time
Angels.
Former member.
I don't think he's ever going to get that third opportunity, but bad enough to get DFA'd by the White Sox. Is there any reason to believe that Adam Eaton gets back on track in Anaheim, where they have Joe Adell waiting in the wings? And Adell, to his credit, has been striking out less at AAA in recent weeks. Any reason to think Eaton has more than AL-only league appeal?
I don't think so. I really don't understand why the Angels even made this move, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you got to fill spots. You need bodies, right? But there's just really nothing here for a non-contending team to be trotting a guy like Adam Eaton out there every single day. So I would expect, you know, little playing time, or the playing time that he does get is really not going to give us too much in the fantasy world. I don't see, after what he gave the White Sox and didn't give the White Sox, why we would suddenly expect him to do something different in Anaheim. So I'm staying away unless I'm AL-only outfield needy.
Hey, the Angels have a 13.4% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. They're still hanging around.
Eaton makes that like 13.2%.
I think it does go down with Eaton. I think they should have taken the chance on Adele. So yeah, Eaton for me, a monoleague player. A couple other monoleague players I just want to mention. Derek Hill back up for the Tigers right now because they DFA'd Nomar Mazara. And I think once Robbie Grossman gets traded, I'm just kind of writing that in ink, Robbie Grossman will get traded between now and the deadline. He's a nice player. He'll be an upgrade for a contending team. Sure. Once that happens, I think you could see Derek Hill play a little bit more. Former first-round pick, added some power a couple years ago. He's always had speed. Just a really interesting guy once he gets the chances to play. Until that happens, I think we have to wait and use him mostly in AL-only leagues. I mentioned that Francisco Lindor injury. It's a grade 2 oblique strain. It looks like Luis Guillorme is going to get most of the playing time at shortstop in the short term. We'll see if the Mets are interested in acquiring another shortstop option at the deadline as well. And then there's Kelvin Gutierrez. This is a really deep league pull. Traded from the Royals to the Orioles, called up before the break. Really in the minors, hasn't shown a whole lot of power. Steals a few bases, hits for a decent average, but the time he's been in the big league so far with Kansas City has offered very little with the bat. Just the kind of guy that did get a park upgrade. And in very deep leagues where all you're looking for is someone who plays, Kelvin Gutierrez at least ticks that box, even if he doesn't bring a whole lot of skills behind it. So a few deep league names out there for those of you playing in 20-team mixers, AL and NL-only leagues, or at least if you want to throw those guys on your watch list. Hill is probably the most watch list relevant guy for mixed leagues in the long run.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's because of the playing time expectations. I do think that Robbie Grossman does find a new home. The Tigers find a new home for him on a contending team, and then Hill could be playing a lot. So that's really the only reason. And these other guys, I don't see either of them graduating beyond those mono league, 20-team mixers, things like that. That's where they're going to live for the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about an Akil Baddoo, Daz Cameron, Derek Hill outfield. That's a pretty fun outfield. Yeah. At least one where you might have a couple guys who are going to be on your next good team playing in it if you're the Tigers. So we definitely want to see that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's get to some of the pitching that is available this week. And there's a few two-start pitchers we're going to get to. One guy that's not confirmed, but I think is on the radar in leagues where he's eligible to be picked up. And again, I say that because I know in NFBC leagues, guys that weren't drafted, who haven't played in the big leagues this yet, cannot be added until they actually start playing. That's Josiah Gray. The Dodgers, of course, have needs in their rotation right now. Clayton Kershaw has the forearm injury. Trevor Bauer still on administrative leave amidst sexual assault allegations. And Gray has been working his way back, stretching out again at AAA. He is their top pitching prospect. David Price has one of those spots right now. The matchups here, this is the classic, if this happens, you know, tough matchup that you don't feel great about, but then the cakewalk that makes you take the chance on that first one. Yep. I think with Gray, you're almost looking at him in leagues where he's eligible right now more for the future, or if you're in a league that doesn't require to use him for both of these starts, you're just eyeing up that second start against Colorado and hoping that he does in fact get this opportunity. I mean, the Dodgers with pitching development what more could you ask for, right? And Gray is one of those guys. You look at his minor league numbers. He has taken off since he was acquired by that by the Dodgers just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think I'd take this chance, even if I have to get that San Francisco start. Probably one of those guys, you make this point a lot, and it's a good point to be making, one of those guys who maybe would be further advanced if he didn't lose the 2020 season, and maybe he would have graduated to the AAA level in 2020 rather than having to wait to 2021 to pitch at that level. So I think there's a lot here to like, and I do think that that Colorado start is worth getting him in there, even if I have to live with the San Francisco start, because as long as he can give you five, even if he just gives you five innings, the win upside is going to be immense against Colorado, and it's going to exist against San Francisco because, you know, the Dodgers are a pretty good team. So even though that's a tough matchup, could very easily win that game too. So I do want him. And as you said, this could be someone who sticks in this rotation for a long time, depending on what happens with the other starters in it. So I do like this. I think this is a nice, aggressive move to make on a guy who could provide us with a lot of value over the next couple of months.
I think Gray is among the many players that have, you know, because he's missed time in the minors this season, he was going to have some workload caps going into the year just because of past workloads and how they want to protect his arm. He's only thrown 15 and two-thirds innings so far this year, so I don't think they have to really hold back on how they use him the rest of the way. Like, he's got plenty of innings left in the tank based on whatever they wanted him to throw this year because of the time that he has missed, but I definitely am interested if they give him that opportunity. It was a shoulder injury, so we'll see where the stuff's at. Looking at the last couple outings at AAA, last time out, 4 2/3 innings against Reno, 3 earned runs, 4 hits, 7 Ks, no walks, so that's really encouraging. A 22-2 strikeout to walk ratio for Gray so far this season in the minors. Some guys who are absolutely available in leagues right now include Caleb Smith. I think we talk about Caleb Smith every other week or so.
Postmaster General, of course we do.
He just lives right there in that roster threshold for 10 and 12 team leagues, especially in 15s. He's probably held a bit more consistently unless he runs into some injury trouble. But this is a pretty nice combination of matchups. Home against the Pirates, absolutely. Road against the Cubs, okay, not a soft landing spot, but not necessarily a spot where you're afraid to throw your mid-range starters. So where available, what's your interest level in Caleb Smith?
Great two-step. I think he gets a lot of strikeouts this week. And even though it's been, you know, pretty uneven performance for Caleb Smith this season, a 4.5 ERA that pretty much every single ERA estimator, no matter which one is your favorite, says he's earning. He's striking guys out, right? I mean, he's striking guys out, and that's pretty much what we've always come to expect from Caleb Smith. 81 Ks and 71 and a third this season. So you look at those two matchups, first Pittsburgh, great. And then at the Cubs, there's some hitters in this lineup that you're still afraid of, but a lot of strikeouts in this lineup too. Up and down, there's going to be a lot of swing and miss in that Cubs lineup. I think Caleb Smith easily gives you 1.3 strikeouts per inning this week, and that's someone who I want in my lineup. So easy guy for me to go after, easy guy for me to like this week, even if I'm out after this week.
Yeah, and it's not going to cost a fortune to go get him. I mean, I think 2% of your budget, 3% of your budget might be enough in a lot of leagues. If you're in a ultra-competitive main event situation, maybe you have to go a tick more. But I think in those 15-teamers, he's already gone. I think you'd be looking at him more like in the online championship and in leagues that are shallow, 10 to 12-team mixed leagues. Again, it's probably that sweet spot. Let's talk about Tristan McKenzie for a moment. He's had a couple of flashes late in the first half where he's looked a lot better than he did earlier in the season. The problem, I think, continues to be command, and even the fastball velocity isn't where we'd like it to be. He's down a full tick compared to where he was a season ago. Do the recent results try to pull you back in? You can see the matchups. You're watching us on YouTube at Houston versus Tampa Bay. You're not picking him up and using him for these two matchups, but do you think there's a chance, given all the issues they've had in their rotation, that he pitches well enough to actually stick and starts to deliver on some of the potential that we saw in him going into the season?
Another guy that Cleveland, I think, has to stick with over the second half of the season, unless the walks are just like hilariously overwhelming and they just can't justify trotting him out there because he's walking, you know, five guys in one inning of work. You just can't do that. And as long as he avoids that, with that potential that he has, and the fact that this team, as I said, when we were talking about Oscar Mercado really not that far away from being a contending team. A couple of clicks, an add here, an add there, maybe an addition by subtraction move, and they're right there again. And so I do think that they need to see what Tristan McKenzie is, what he can be for them in 2022, and perhaps beyond that as well. Another one of these teams we talk about as having just a great, great development track record, and I would just bet on this working out with Tristan McKenzie eventually, so long as he can find the strike zone. So as if you're not compelled to start him against Houston and Tampa this week, he's definitely someone who I want to be on in the long run, because I do think that there is a lot of ceiling here for the rest of the season if he can just cut that walk rate to like even like 10% is something that we could live with what his ceiling is and the amount of strikeouts he can get. We just can't have him walking 18.9% of batters he faces the rest of the season, the mark that he's put up to this point of the season.
Yeah, and I think if you do pick him up this week and you stash him, keep an eye on the radar gun, because he showed an uptick in velocity in July, has shown one so far compared to where he was in the first 3 months of the season. Holding that would go a long way toward helping him get back on track. And I don't think the minor league track record with him doesn't point to prolonged issues with command and control. He wasn't walking guys at any stop. He was young for the level everywhere he was. It just seems to me that he's the kind of guy that, especially if he gets a bit stronger, if he adds a little muscle in the offseason, could be the kind of guy that we're all very excited about going into 2022, especially if he puts together a nice stretch here to close out this season. Let's get to another guy in your neck of the woods, Alec Mills. He's got a couple of nice starts coming up at St. Louis, home against Arizona. He was an Eno guy going into the season, of course, through a no-hitter late last year against the Brewers. I still owe you beer for that, so hopefully I can get that to you before I move, because it's going to be even more of a
give me
pain
some
to do
no,
it.
Wait until after. Give me some California beer. Give me some, you know, give me some Palo Alto, San Francisco area beer.
Oh, you want that instead of the Spotted Cow? That's fine. I can happily oblige. It is beer owed regardless of what you want. I have to cover it. So I'm looking at Mills, and he's been brutal so far this year just in terms of results, but the underlying numbers aren't that bad just in terms of the K rate, the walk rate. That stuff all kind of looks like it did a season ago. I think he's a true like back end starter, but I think a back end starter like Mills can actually be useful in these types of matchups. At St. Louis, definitely not a bad road spot to have to go, and then catching the Diamondbacks at home, especially if you could split them. I think in daily leagues, Mills is going to be a very popular streamer during the weekend against the Diamondbacks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and I don't mind that St. Louis matchup at all. And when you say back-end starter, true back-end starter, I agree with you, and there are two ways to read that. One is the negative way. He's a true back-end starter. He's nothing more than that. He's a number five, whatever. But there's also the positive way that, hey, this is a guy who is for sure good enough to stick in a major league rotation as a four or a five. And as long as those are the expectations you have for him, he's not really going to disappoint you. And so I think that a guy like that, matchups like this, certainly that Arizona one, pretty easy guy to get on board with. I like Caleb Smith better. If I can only have one of these guys for their two-step this week, I would go for Caleb Smith first because of the strikeouts I expect him to give you. But this is a nice fallback option if you do miss out on Caleb Smith.
Yeah, I would say a near min-bid sort of guy, not necessarily someone you're going to hold on the roster beyond these two starts. A very, very schedule-dependent player. But I think he is a bit better than he's pitched to this point here in 2021. Got a forgotten guy on the rundown today. That's Touki Toussaint, and the Braves, of course, have a lot of injuries in their rotation, so the door is open for him to possibly claim a spot and hold on to it for a while. I think the prospect luster has definitely faded, and we're talking about a guy who's coming off of a shoulder injury, so expectations in the short term should probably be dialed back, but given the need there, and given that he was pitching well on his rehab assignment, back-to-back outings where he went six innings, I don't think he faces significant in-start workload restrictions with Atlanta possibly pushing him out there for these two matchups.
You like that he went back-to-back for six innings in those last two, because not only does it tell you that they're probably not going to really restrict his workload, but tells you that shoulder's probably feeling pretty well too. And so they don't feel any need to restrict his workload based on health either. So that's really nice. And so you like to see that. Still think this is a low priority sort of guy. Still think this is a pretty much a min bid situation, especially if you do have to start him after adding him because of that matchup that he's got with the Padres to kick off this week. But someone who does have a little bit of ceiling, someone who does have a little bit of identifiable upside, and that's something that we're always looking for at this stage of the season, because you're not really going to just add guys off the wire who can maybe stick in your rotation for the remainder of the season. I don't think Toussaint quite gets to that point, But there's still a little bit of luster here where we could delude ourselves into believing that he gets to that point. So if that's what you're looking for, I would go after him. I do think that the other guys we've talked about as pure two-star pitchers are pretty easier guys to get onto your team, easier guys that you're going to want on your team more than Toussaint.
Yeah, I think Toussaint, probably for now, more of an NL-only sort of pickup and a watch list guy in most mixed leagues. If your ratios are just decimated and you are just trying to play catch-up and hoping to be right with two-star pitchers and close the gap, maybe get a couple points and ERA and whip by the end of the season and chase wins and Ks, in that scenario, I think you could probably talk yourself into him as a min-bid or contingency bid player in a 15-team mixed league. I wouldn't go anything more shallow than that right now, especially with these matchups. But nice to see him healthy again, and hopefully we'll see better control from Touki Toussaint this time around. That's been a major problem for him, really going back 3 years now in Atlanta. Just walks the world, but has the ability to miss some bats. And if it doesn't work for him as a starter, we are probably hitting that point in his career where they probably shift him into the bullpen and see what he can do there. Braves also turning to Kyle Muller right now. Same matchups there. I don't see a whole lot to get excited about with Muller. I think he's got slightly below average stuff and just kind of average-ish command. So I don't like these matchups. I think I would put him behind Toussaint if I'm looking at these guys in really, really deep leagues. And then I saw a name that I was not very familiar with on the grid, Spencer Watkins, who is starting for the Orioles. When I saw S. Watkins on the RotoWire grid, I thought, Sammy Watkins is going two sports now? I know he's with the Ravens, but he's also just moonlighting with the Orioles? No, not the case. At Tampa, at Washington, nothing really going there. I think kind of like Muller, I looked at the underlying numbers, didn't see anything in that profile that stood out to me as particularly strong. Yeah. So I would say AL-only leagues if you're in that desperate situation I described, and right, probably only then. So not really any appeal for Spencer Watkins at this time. Let's get to some of the one-star pitchers available. A little more to choose from over there. Eric Lauer, who has pitched to a sub-4 ERA and just over a strikeout per inning thus far, home against the Royals. So classic pitch-and-ditch opportunity here to tip the cap to the old fantasy 411 show on MLB Network. But are you in on Lauer for this week just as a streaming option?
Absolutely. A very easy pitch and ditch option here. And a guy who, you know, going back over the balance of his career, back to when he was with the Padres and what he's done this season with the Brewers, he's basically a strikeout per inning guy. I think we can pretty much count on that. Earning his sub-4 ERA to a certain degree as well. This is a great matchup. A guy who is always on our stream radar because of the things that he does provide us, and in pretty good supply and also in pretty good reliability. I mean, this is someone who doesn't really blow things up too often. So I do think that Eric Lauer, nice matchup with the Royals, easy guy to get on board with, and I like him better than some of the, like, I would rather go for Lauer than Toussaint, for example, unless volume was really a consideration for me. But if I wanted the best pitcher in the best spot, I would go for Lauer here and just get one start out of him.
Yeah, I didn't think a near min bid might be able to get it done at this point as well. And of course, the Brewers are being a little careful with Freddy Peralta. It sounds like he's not pitching again until next weekend because they're monitoring his innings. He, of course, was in the bullpen last year. They don't want to overwork him. So part of that is also continuing to use Lauer as a part of that rotation mix. It looks as though Taylor Widener is going to be back up. This is an unconfirmed start. If he comes back up for the Diamondbacks, he gets a home start against Pittsburgh. I think I would keep him behind Lauer, which is why he's after Lauer on the rundown. But I continue to be amazed by Widener. It's only 28 to 30 innings. It's only six starts. I had such low expectations for him that even in a relatively small sample, a sub-3 ERA and a good whip and nearly a strikeout per inning were just things I did not expect to get from him.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I don't think that we should have expected that, really going back over his minor league numbers, that we wouldn't really think he's that kind of pitcher. He got blown up at AAA in the 2019 season. And so I do think that he's pitching a little bit above his head right now, but we're not too concerned with that when you're looking at a matchup with Pittsburgh. This is a pure matchup-based play, but one that is pretty easy to make, one that you should be pretty excited to make if it is available to you. I am in agreement. Lauer first, pretty easily. If I can't get Lauer, that's where Widener enters the discussion for me.
It gets pretty dicey from there. A couple of their names, two in the Detroit rotation. One, Matt Manning, a top prospect who has just not pitched well this year in Toledo or in Detroit. Still in the minors right now. They have to call him up if they're going to actually use him in this spot. Are you interested in Manning at all outside of long-term leagues based on what you've seen over the course of this year?
I'm not. There's always the desperation caveat that we talk about with pitchers. You mentioned it earlier. If your ratios are totally shot and you're trying to play catch up and get a little bit lucky, or if your ratios are totally shot and you're trying to make up some ground in volume areas and you don't care if you get lucky in the ratio numbers, that caveat always applies. So Matt Manning can qualify for a fantasy league interest in that sort of way. But it has to be that. It has to be that. It has to be long term, and you know, thinking that maybe another offseason will get things on track for him. But if that's not where I'm sitting, then I don't really want to play with fire here.
14 home runs allowed in 54 and a third innings split between the Mud Hens and the Tigers so far this year in 12 starts. I can't trust it. I saw him on the grid, get excited by the name, but we need to see a little more before we can actually trust Matt Manning in most redraft situations. Believe it or not, I think this other guy, a blast from the past, Willy Peralta, is more interesting right now. Big difference for him. He's got a split change he's been throwing. It's a pitch he didn't used to have. Doesn't throw as hard as he used to, but might be attacking hitters with a slightly better game plan. I think if I'm looking for innings and I'm not worried about ratios, Peralta is kind of the equivalent of Tuki Toussaint. He just doesn't have that long-term ceiling where you could do worse. you could find a worse starter in a worse match. I just like that he's got a new pitch. I think it's a reason to kind of step back and reevaluate him again. So it was a good call out by Ian Kahn on Under the Radar earlier this week. I think this version of Willy Peralta at least has a chance to be occasionally streamable. And at Kansas City is that kind of matchup you're looking for guys who are occasionally streamable.
Whenever a guy who, especially a guy who we know well, like Willy Peralta, suddenly has better performance, I think we always want to look for that substantive change. Does he have a new pitch? Is he changing the way his pitch mix is used? Does he suddenly have new velocity? Like, we always want to look for something that we can point to as a reason why, other than just, you know, the short-term vagaries of baseball and everyone's going to have a nice two-start stretch or three-start stretch, whatever the case might be. Willy Peralta has that, as you said, the split change. So that's enough for me to say, hey, maybe this is a slightly new pitcher, and that Kansas City matchup, two thumbs up for it for sure. So, yeah, someone who I would get on board with, maybe right there with Widener. I think I'd rather have Widener, but I would put in like the same level of bid for Peralta with just Widener ranked ahead of him. And then if I don't get him, Peralta would be my next guy.
Yeah, like min bid or zero bid or min bid plus two, something just real small, I think, for guys like that. And curious to see where it goes. Also not going to push it too much if the matchups get a bit more difficult for Peralta in the near future. Let's get to some reliever talk here. Ranger Suarez perhaps proving to be the answer that the Phillies are looking for in their bullpen. Like I didn't think we'd get down to one clear-cut closer in Philly, but I'm starting to think there's a chance that Ranger Suarez actually could be that guy. Beller, can you talk me into him or out of him? which direction are you going to choose? Because I'm kind of lukewarm. I'm kind of like lightly bidding where I need saves. I'm not aggressive. I'm not ignoring him. Do you have a stronger pull with Suarez?
So I don't have a stronger pull. That's pretty much where I am with him also. But I would choose the talking into side because of what a nightmare this bullpen has been. I mean, they've been so bad this season, really up and down from, you know, a pretty, there's some talented arms back there. You know, we expect more out of Hector Neris. We expect more out of Jose Alvarado, and they just haven't been able to do it. And Ranger Suarez, in whatever role the Phillies have asked of him this season, has been, you know, pretty good in it. So I think that with the consistency that he has shown this season, that he's going to get this chance, and where there's really no reason for us to doubt him based on what he's done this season. Obviously, that could go off the rails, but you have to take it at face value at this stage of a season, and so I think that there's reason to believe that he can hold on to the job. Now, obviously, Phillies could easily be in sell mode over the next 12 days, even though the Mets have really let everyone stay in the race in the NL East, right? All these teams, Philly, Washington, Atlanta, definitely can all talk themselves into overtaking the Mets. And Atlanta, we're seeing them already with that Jock Peterson trade. Clearly, they think that they're still in the mix here. They're buyers. So that maybe complicates matters. But in a situation where Ranger Suarez remains in Philly, I do think that he is the closer for this team.
Yeah, results have been great so far. Changeup's really good. Fastball, even with the extra velocity, doesn't grade out particularly well. But definitely a guy that I would throw at least like a 2-3% bid on if I'm stuck in that need a third closer position. I still think It's Philly. Like, we just when you think that someone has settled in, they go out and get blown up, and then everything changes again. It's just one of those bullpens where I don't think we're ever going to be lucky enough to have that that calm, consistent presence, at least not down the stretch this season. I think Suarez could be the closest thing to it, but I would look at him as more like a half closer than a guy that actually has the entirety of the job at this point. I want to bring up a guy we talked about last week again. Paul Sewald continues to pitch well. Kendall Graveman made a mess that he couldn't finish on Friday night. Sewald came in, cleaned up, and actually got the save. We've talked about Graveman as a guy that we expect to be traded at the deadline because the Mariners should fall out of playoff contention in these next couple of weeks. So I just want to throw him out there again because he continues to pitch really well. The ERA sits at 1.38 and the WHIP a tick below 1 at 0.96. 44 Ks in 26 innings this season for Paul Sewald.
He's been awesome. And I think the concern here is that he gets traded too. Like, he could very easily get traded to a team that's looking for some setup help and looking for some back end bullpen help. And suddenly this potential closer in waiting just becomes remains a very good setup man. So I think that's the risk with Paul Sewald. But what are we talking? I mean, we're not talking that it's going to take a huge bid to get him. Well worth the risk of him getting traded elsewhere and remaining this sort of player in the fantasy world for the type of pitcher he's been and the payoff that could be coming if Kendall Graveman does indeed get traded and Paul Sewald remains in Seattle. Because unlike Philly, if that does happen, I think Sewald pretty easily is the next guy up. And with the way he's pitched this season, we should have a lot of confidence in him pitching well enough to retain that job. There's also always the factor of him being a good enough pitcher, getting enough strikeouts, getting good enough ratios that he can give you a little bit of value, even if he's not saving games or if he is sharing the closer's job. So there's a lot to like here. The only real risk of him not having any major fantasy value is if he too gets traded and remains a setup man elsewhere.
Yeah, I want to just put this one out there in a real simple toss-up. Suarez or Sewald for the rest of the way in leagues where they're both available.
Give me Sewald because of those strikeouts. 44 and 26 really jumps off the page.
Yeah, stuff appears to be just a little bit better. One more possible closer in waiting that we're keeping an eye on is Anthony Bender in Miami. 35% K rate this season. Gets a lot of outs on the ground. He's got a 1.78 ERA. Plenty of Ks. It's not the elite like 15 Ks per nine that you get from a lot of closers, but nearly 12 Ks per nine so far this season with 40 strikeouts in 30 and a third innings. Doesn't have an issue with walks, doesn't have an issue with home runs. Just looks like a guy that if he does in fact take over, he could be maybe the best Marlins closer that we've had at our disposal all season.
Yeah, he definitely could be. I mean, Yimi Garcia definitely had his run earlier in the year, but been pretty shaky of late, and shaky to the point where I wonder if he's even as attractive on the trade market as we assumed he was a couple of weeks ago. Maybe he's not. And so I would be a little concerned about that if I were going after Anthony Bender, of Yimi Garcia remaining in Miami and figuring things out enough to stay in the closer's role. But again, a guy who the rewards clearly and comfortably outweigh the short-term risk of him not taking over the closer job in a way that we're looking for. And you do like that 12K per nine, not the elite number, but still enough that he's getting you those strikeouts whenever he does come in. So I think he would definitely be behind Sewald for me. And I think he would be behind Suarez too, if I'm hunting for saves and hunting for closer and waiting sort of players on the wire later today. But I'm not depressed if he's my fallback. I still feel good about him being the guy who I get this weekend if I miss out on Suarez and Sewald.
Yeah, good contingency option if you're just looking to fill out that ninth spot in your lineup and want someone that can help with the ratios and maybe eventually help you out with saves as well.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Got a question here from Jim. I like that he included speed round. Speed round through all 30 teams and who their closers are, respectively, on August 1st. Let's try this. So I'll name the team and the current closer. We'll see if that guy keeps it.
I gotta Angels pull up roster resource.
Yeah, I was gonna say Angels, Raisel Iglesias. Are they gonna trade him or are they gonna keep him?
I'm gonna say Raisel's their closer.
Yeah, I think they're still gonna trick themselves into trying to contend. Astros, Ryan Pressly, still the guy, I think, after the break there. A's, still Lou Trevino, or do they trade for somebody?
I'm gonna say Trevino.
Yeah, he's pitched pretty well. Blue Jays, this is one where I could see a change. I would say the Blue Jays are on that short list of teams that could be acquiring Craig Kimbrel. So Romano, Dolis, those guys should be in the bridge. I'm gonna say Kimbrel goes to Toronto. I thought they needed a reliever in the offseason. They tried to get one. Kirby Yates got hurt. And I think they're going to go ahead and push some chips in and go after Craig Kimbrel.
Would love to see that be the case. 7.5 behind the Red Sox, 6 behind the Rays. It's an uphill battle for them, I think, to make the postseason this year. I think the acquisition cost is too high for Craig Kimbrel ultimately for them because there's going to be a lot of contenders for him. I say it's still Romano.
I'm out of my mind, apparently. Let's go to the Braves. I think Will Smith stays there. That they're probably just going to try and hang around. He's a multi-year deal guy, so probably not going anywhere. Brewers will still be Josh Hader. Cardinals, I think, will still be Alex Reyes. Still lots of control left on him. He's pitched really well. No reason to go away from him. We've talked about the Cubs. If they trade Kimbrel, Ryan Tepera, is he the guy, or is he also traded, so it's someone else entirely?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say that, that's what happens, that Kimbrel definitely goes, Tepera also goes, and you know what? I'm going to say they just pull it all off, and Andrew Chafin goes as well. I think we're looking at Dan Winkler as the Cubs closer on August 1st.
Dan Winkler. Oof,
I think that's the order. It's Kimbrel, Tepera, Chafin, Winkler is what you're looking at as the Cubs closer pecking order.
Here's another one, the Diamondbacks. I mean, Joaquin Soria probably ends up in a contending bullpen. I said back in the beginning of the year, JB Bukauskas should end the season as the D-backs closer, so I'm going to stick with JB.
Don't they have to throw him in there if and when they trade Soria? I mean, what are you doing if you're the Diamondbacks and you're not putting Bukauskas? I called it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about him, like literal high leverage situations because of just how we define that, but low leverage in the terms of how much the wins and losses actually mean to the Diamondbacks. So you get these low leverage, high leverage situations for a guy who could be your closer on your next contending team. No brainer that he should be the closer for this team on August 1st.
Let's get to the Dodgers, where Kenley Jansen has pitched really well this year. Kenley Jansen has not allowed an earned run since May 28th.
Wow. I did not realize that. Yes, Kenley Jansen is the closer up for this team on August 1st.
Yeah, he's been great so far this season. Rolling through, we got the Giants. I think they would also be in the market to possibly add Kimbrel.
This is my Kimbrel team.
That's your Kimbrel team? That's probably a better use of Kimbrel than the Jays. Who else is out there as a closer? Maybe Richard Rodriguez is closing for the Giants because they're not going away anytime soon. Like they're going to be good for a few years. Like a guy with control left also makes sense for them.
That's true. But I think they swing for it now. They see what's happening with the Dodgers. They see what's happening with the Padres. Even though they're not going away anytime soon, they're also going to be running third in this division next year. So I think they make the swing this year and they go get Kimbrel. And also, like, the Padres are going to be in on Kimbrel, I think. And so even as well as Mark Melancon has pitched, and so not only would the Giants getting Kimbrel get them Craig Kimbrel, but it keeps them from going to the Padres too. So this is my team. I say that the Giants make the big move and they land Craig Kimbrel. He's closing for them on August 1st.
So Emmanuel Clase has had 3 blown saves in his last 4 appearances. ERA still at 2.13, WHIP still at 1.29. I would assume it's James Karinchak if they just make a change internally. I don't think they're trading any of those guys away.
No,
am I wrong to assume it's one of those two guys the rest of the way?
I think you're definitely right to assume it's one of those two guys the rest of the way. And I do think that my bet would be on Karinchak getting more opportunities. I don't think either of them is going to be the sole closer in Cleveland the rest of the way, but I bet Karinchak gets more opportunities.
All right. Seattle, we just talked about. Paul Sewald, I think, is the guy. Let's put Kendall Graveman on the Giants. That's the guy I'll put on the Giants instead of Richard Rodriguez. That's because Graveman's been in Toronto before. They're not going to go down that road again. So I think San Francisco is Kendall Graveman's new home. Marlins, we talked about just a moment ago. Let's say Anthony Bender, just because of all the shuffling happening there. Edwin Diaz, is he still the closer for the Mets on August 1st?
I mean, this could be another place for Kimbrel, I suppose, but I will say Edwin Diaz sticks. It's Diaz, if without a trade, it's Diaz. There's no internal takeovers here.
A walk-off grand slam last night against the Pirates. Back-to-back blown saves. Why does he do this? He looks so good for a stretch. He had a 286 ERA and a 107 whip after his outing on July 10th, and now he's at 417 and 123 because of six earned runs allowed in his last two innings. It's so frustrating. He should not get hit like that. How about the Nationals? Brad Hand still closing on August 1st?
Yeah, I'll say Brad Hand. Could trade him. But definitely no internal takeover. Give me Brad Hand as the next closer.
I think their core is old enough. Like, obviously, they have Soto and Turner as part of that core. Mm-hmm. But like the other part of the core is so old, they're going to try and keep adding a little bit. So yeah. I'll stay on the Hand side of that one, too. Orioles, does it even matter? I mean, like they just mix and match so much. Like Paul Fry is probably going to be gone.
Yeah.
If it's Sulzer or Valdez, I'm not that excited. If it were Dylan Tate or Tanner Scott, that'd be pretty interesting if they could lean on one of those guys.
It would be. It's not going to be a primary guy. I'll say that Sulzer gets the majority or a plurality. And no one's going to even get a majority of opportunities. I think the best you can hope for is a plurality, and I'll give that to Sulzer.
I'll go Tanner Scott just to be a little different. Let's go to San Diego. Mark Melanson still closing on August 1st for the Padres.
It's Melanson or Kimbrel, and I'll say they don't get Kimbrel and Melanson's closing.
Phillies, we just talked about Suarez, the primary guy, even if he's not getting all the saves.
Yep, I'm comfortable going that route.
And then Richard Rodriguez in Pittsburgh, gone?
He has to be gone, right? And so what we're looking at, Bednar or Kyle Crick? I'll say Bednar is the closer for the Pirates on August 1st.
Yeah, I'm with you there on Bednar. I think he makes a lot of sense. We got to put Rodriguez on a different team, I think, as we keep moving through. The Rangers, Ian Kennedy probably gone, so where do they go?
Yeah, I mean, Ian Kennedy is I would say a lock to be traded. I mean, Joely Rodriguez, that was when we talked to Levi Weaver, our Rangers beat writer, a couple of months ago, I want to say it was at this point, that was who he pointed to. So I will ride with that on the ground knowledge and say Joely Rodriguez ends up closing for this team.
I hope it's someone like DeMarcus Evans, health permitting.
That would be great.
That'd be a lot of fun.
That'd be a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm. The Rays, I mean, geez, is there ever an answer to that question?
Yeah, right? There just isn't.
Diego Castillo probably has the primary, larger share, but still sharing. Matt Barnes in Boston got that extension, so he's the guy there. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati, I think they
another
might.
Another one.
You know what? Cincinnati could be the team. Maybe they add Richard Rodriguez.
They could. They definitely could be the team that adds Richard Rodriguez. But what are they? How much are they? Yeah, they're six back of the Brewers, and they obviously are not deluding themselves into thinking they're contending for the wild card in the National League. So I don't know. Like maybe like I just don't see them taking on a significant trade. Not that Richard Rodriguez is going to have a huge acquisition cost, but someone's going to be more desperate than them. We really are missing out on Richard Rodriguez's team. I will say that I feel like wherever he goes, he's probably going to go as a setup man, though. But I'm going to say Lucas Sims. As long as he can come back in early August like they're anticipating, I'll say Lucas Sims gets the majority of the opportunities there.
Yeah, I'm on board with that if he's, in fact, healthy. The Rockies, Daniel Bard probably still there. They could go to Carlos Estevez or Michael Givens. But Givens could also be traded, so I think Estevez probably is the most likely to be closing on August 1st if those guys move as expected. The Royals are another shrug emoji team with their closer situation.
Totally.
Josh Stamont's the guy that should be closing, I think, longer term. So I'd give him the upper hand, but I think that's a shared situation as well. How about the Tigers? Fulmer's probably going to get traded if he's healthy. Gregory Soto's been getting a lot of saves. I don't think they want to trade Soto right now. He's got lots of years of control left.
Yep.
So my lean is that Soto's probably their closer on August 1st.
Totally with you. Totally with you on that one. And I think, you know, Fulmer is making the recovery on the timetable they were expecting. So I do think he gets traded. And Soto's got the closer's job essentially locked down.
I think the Twins, they have one more year of Taylor Rogers before free agency. So he could get traded. People don't talk that much about it because he's expensive next year. If they trade him, it's Tyler Duffy. I think Hansel Robles would be gone too. He's a free agent at the end of the year. I don't think they're going to trade Rogers, so I'm not stashing Duffy everywhere at this point. But I do like him if he gets the opportunity. White Sox, Liam Hendricks, that's pretty easy. And then the Yankees, is it still Aroldis Chapman, given what we've seen in recent weeks?
I think it's still Aroldis Chapman. We've done this dance with Chapman before where he has a couple of bad outings and he gets sat down for a little bit. The Yankees have the luxury of being able to do that because they have guys like Chad Green and Zach Britton, but Chapman's going to be this team's closer. No doubt about it.
Seems like it, but hopefully that helps some people out there. Good question, Jim. The speed round of all 30 teams and who we think the closers are going to be when the dust clears after the trade deadline. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, now is a great time to get one. $3.99 a month gets you in the door at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. On Twitter, he's at mbeller. I'm at Derek Van Riper. We're back with you on Tuesday with Under the Radar.